see. It'd be great to see you over there. I quarantined myself this evening.
And where were we? At the dump or something?
Yeah. I ran you everywhere.
Mr. Rock, you're just in time. We now have a quorum of people who were at the last HPC meeting. So I'll ask the commissioners who were present for that meeting to take a look at the agenda from the February 7th meeting, if you haven't had an opportunity to already. And when you are ready, I'll entertain a motion to approve or not approve. I read through this already. I welcome Rob. So we're just taking a look at the minutes from the last meeting, February 7th.
Are we approving the agenda or the minutes?
The minutes.
Okay. I reviewed the minutes from the last meeting. Would move to approve those set of meeting minutes.
Second.
All in favor of approving the minutes from last meeting?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. It's unanimous. They are approved. Let's see. So we have a guest with us this evening. And who are the representatives of the property at 8th Street? Okay, so you're all here representing the property at 6th Street?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Okay, wonderful. Well, let's go ahead and address that so you can get on your way this evening. John, I think you've given us a staff report here. These gentlemen have asked for a comment on some proposed design changes in the business.
I apologize for not printing up colored reports. It seems like every time that I do this, assuming that somebody else is going to do it, because it seems like Jackie has them, I have them, they were emailed to you. So anyway, we've been through these before. This is an area that's in the overlay district. And under the Heritage Overlay District, the city staff comes to the commission to ask for comments on the proposal. This particular proposal is for a change to what I think was originally, well, I don't know what it was originally, but previous to this, it was a hairstyling salon, beauty shop. Is it beauty school?
Vancouver School of Beauty, yeah.
All right. Bacon's? I think I saw it on there at one time, so I don't know. Anyway, so what the intent is, and I do have the color renderings that show what the facade looks like. Basically, the changes, as I understand it, are there would be a sectional door put in where there currently are windows, and then the paint colors would be changed to some degree. There's also a picture that we had in the exhibits of the proposed sign, where they will actually reutilize the existing sign case that's on. Gosh, it's really good. Is that Washington?
It's a corner sign.
Okay.
Kind of those diagonal ones,
yeah,
that come out the side, right,
so
there on 6th.
On the southwest corner of the building. It looked relatively straightforward from staff. We didn't see any real issues with it. The commission is a little bit more tinted colors and the potential for changing to the aluminum sectional doors, which seems to be kind of becoming a thing downtown. We've had a couple of buildings that are doing that, and I think your next one has something similar. No, yes. And there's already been a couple that have been put in downtown. It seemed to fit fairly well. So what we'd like is comments. Is there anything you guys would like to add?
I can just real briefly, the new proposed tenant for that space is a restaurant tenant, and the goal with the sectional door is, of course, to create that openness between the interior and the exterior, where if the weather is good, you could open it up and have a lot of movement in between that area, potentially outdoor seating, and just create a more an area that's more attached to the street in that location. That particular building, it's a nice old building, but it went through a lot of times without a whole lot of TLC when it was owned by the Vancouver School of Beauty. And so it has that kind of a look. So a lot of what we're proposing in terms of repainting where the tile wainscoting is just to freshen that area up and make it a little bit nicer. And then I guess I'll just point out that the top over those of you who are looking at it, there's sort of clerestory windows up above above where the entrance door and the storefront are, that are currently mostly just plywooded over. We'll replace all the glass in those and in the existing frames as well.
So John, as, in terms of interpreting this rendering here, so the two color facades, those are the proposed facades, and the black and white facades are...
It does not belong to us, but it's part of the block.
Okay.
Yeah, that's just the next building over. So okay. What happened, the Vancouver School of Beauty is actually a fairly large building, mm-hmm. and the new ownership has divided it into multiple tenant spaces.
So then really what we're looking at here is the kind of the one on the far left,
yeah.
in color, uh-huh. which is as it exists today.
No, that's the proposed, yeah. So with the painted tile, the wainscoting, but all the brick colors and whatnot are all, and the parapet trim and all that is as it is now.
Okay, so this is proposed, and then this is also proposed.
Yeah, with the sectional door.
With the sectional
door, yeah.
Okay.
And then, for those of you who know that area, the next space down is that, I think it's called De Novo Pizza, which just recently went in.
Mm-hmm. Is that the block that's owned by the Schofield?
Yes.
Family?
Yeah.
Okay, so we've looked at a few properties there.
Okay, yeah.
Was there a canopy on this building in the recent past, like the last few years?
No. If there was, it goes back more than a decade.
And on the elevation, so there's transom glazing in this color, and then there are some panels of a color that match the door, and those
are just plywood, plywood panels.
Would they be painted?
Yeah, those are all existing colors. Yeah. So the existing building there is got that sort of a cap brown trim, and then they did those accent panels, which are just plywood panels done in sort of a reddish merlot or something.
Okay. So you retain those, and then this overhead door cuts into the...
I think we probably like, I don't know, what have you guys thought about all that trim? Would you like to paint all of that little wood trim? And
we like the color it is right now. Okay. And that's pretty much how it looks right now, but we just want a stripe of blue around the base. That tile that's actually where the garage door is, there's a break in it. Mm-hmm. So it's not original tile all the way around. That was part of the idea for the garage door was we'd have to replace that tile anyway. There's a break in it, and it's not very well done, in my opinion, but
okay.
All the other tile is original, and we like that.
And there's a base, like probably a precast concrete or something.
Yeah.
Is that original color and just leave alone kind of thing, or that touch-up paint, or
I don't know about original, but yeah, existing.
Yeah, existing color.
And then these, you know, what I would think of as kind of these storefront openings, as far as the structure of the infill, especially the lower portion, what is that structure? Because you're going to have to be removing some of it for the garage door. Is
it just wood?
It's just framed in?
Yeah.
Okay. And the tiles are, you know, I've been by the building, but I've never looked closely at those tiles.
I think they're just ceramic tiles. Mm. Yeah. It's a bit period. It might be porcelain.
So the aluminum sectional door then would just be replacing plywood that's been put up there?
Well, there is a window in that opening, but so it'd be replacing where that existing window is.
Okay.
What's the material on these windows right now? The windows that will be replaced, and then the windows that are being retained, the framing material.
Okay, so down below they're like just single pane steel frames,
mm-hmm.
and then up above they're handmade wood frames.
Okay.
So they're just.
And the wood frames would stay intact.
Yeah, we just replace the glazing.
What's the history there? Because that's in a part of the Schofield building that lay on that whole block. We looked at the 1906, what I call the stable. And then there's a bar at the end that was involved in some gunfights about 100 years ago. That whole area was a brothel around the Civil War. Do you know the history of that?
I don't.
Do you know the year it was built? Because it had a different facade in the 60s. It had bright pink tile, and I mean, it was a completely different building.
Yeah, you mean where the brick is?
The tile was different.
Oh, just the tile, the wainscoting.
Yeah.
It's kind of a pinkish color now.
Kind of Pepto-Bismol kind of stuff. So you don't know any of the history?
I don't know. It was Vancouver School of Beauty since I can remember.
Yeah, it has been.
And then the description says that the sectional door is solid aluminum.
No, aluminum with glass in it.
With glass,
yeah.
Okay.
And did you say the structure that's being removed at the wainscot level? That's a wood.
Yeah.
It's like wood frame, so this thing was entirely open before.
Yeah.
At some point it was filled in.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think the wainscoting is original, is my hunch. I think there's the tile in that area looks like it was redone at some point.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't match the adjacent, but there's no building structure in there.
That's kind of what I mean. The primary structure here is broken, and it always has been broken.
Yes.
In these glazing bays.
Yeah, and that sort of that khaki thing is a header that goes all the way across.
And what about the brick? How's the chinking and the condition of the brick?
It actually looks pretty good. I haven't really studied all the whether it needs to be repointed or anything, but I think the brick actually looks pretty good. It's that kind of a model brick style.
Have you seen any evidence that this brick was laid over a separate material? Because that's not the same brick that's on the rest of the building. I've walked the whole block.
Yeah, I don't see any evidence of that.
So this is a request for review and comment. So maybe we can just go around, and if anybody has any comments that you'd like to the owners of this business do so. Maybe I'll start. I misinterpreted this when I read it the first time, John. I thought we were demoing kind of the facade with the recessed entry and replacing that, but that's not the case. So I was very concerned about that, but I think this is, even though it is a change to the existing windows, I don't, if memory serves me correctly, I don't think that those windows that are there and boarded over really add a lot of character to the property. So I think that, you know, it'd be good to have a new business in there, and I think that this is a fairly gentle design for what you need to do. Give the other commissioners an opportunity to comment. In order.
Well, my only comment is I'm fairly familiar with that structure going back. My mother went there a lot. There were transoms over those doors that opened, and I remember those transoms being open. Are you going to try and have opening transoms again? Because we're...
That's the top panel of windows? Yeah, we've noticed...
Oh, just over the door is what I'm referring to.
This one here.
Yeah, I think they're original. I mean, they open now, and we don't plan to do anything major to those.
So they'll continue the way they are functioning?
Well, I think it would be great to keep them.
As long as they're secure. I mean, I haven't gotten up there to look at them. We definitely want some locks on our doors and windows, you know?
I agree.
But, yeah, as long as they're lockable, I think we want to have... kind of the idea behind the garage where I want to have some open air and some sunlight mm-hmm. going through that corner. Mm-hmm.
It's just a balancing act to keep, you know, the cultural, you know, purity of the building and then at the time it was built with modern usage, so mm-hmm. which I think you're doing a good job.
Yeah, we're excited about that corner. We've liked it for a long time.
So it was like an awning style window? Or?
It used to open. I remember that because it used to be hotter than blazes
like
in there
chain.
In the summer.
They're like a little chain and they just set open.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a lot of times in the modern world, they just shut them and they are no longer functioning transoms. And I'd like to see that element stay. There was a reason they were built with transoms.
Some of the windows up on the ones that we will clean that are above the door frame there, those do the same thing. Mm.
So you're going to leave all of that functionality
in
place?
Our landlord is going to clean them. So they will allow sunlight through. But we're going to keep them the way they are.
Mm, great. What kind of restaurant?
Tacos.
I think, you know, Robert hit the nail on the head with it. It is pretty gentle. You know, these buildings with these bays like this, you know, historically this infill area was meant to be actually somewhat disposable. You know, it was the piece that could be completely replaced. And, you know, I like that you're only replacing as much as you need to. You know, I think the only thing since that the sectional door is probably the biggest intrusion, if there's a way to get its structure to align with the visual lines of the facade. You know, so like, I don't know if this is just a standard CAD element in there or what, but you know, if there's a way that line of the tiles can be continued across and at least preserve the line that was there before. I don't think it's a big deal, but you know, I think that could add, you know, helps maintain this historic line that you have across the building that is being maintained in the other bays right now. You know, but that's the only thing that I really have of note. Freshening up paint and colors, it's really not a big deal. And it's actually part of maintenance.
There's probably a way... I think it would be tough to get the section lines to match up with mm-hmm. the wainscoting, but there may be a way to add like a frit to the glass or...
Mm-hmm.
Or something like that, where we could pick up that line.
Or even, you know, just carrying the color, because you're painting those tiles, carrying that color
right.
onto the frames, and maybe even the glass, because, you know, there's a certain amount of, kind of got that lower glass, and,
right.
you know, if there are tables in there, that's just people's legs.
Yeah.
You know, so they might actually appreciate
right.
getting rid of the visible part there.
Opaque.
Mm-hmm.
There could be a little bit of that, but we could find a way to do that.
Yeah, because I imagine you're stuck with standard sizes on the door.
Yeah, they kind of have to be the same, some equal number of...
The only way they're going to line up is if you get lucky. But if you, yeah, if there are some things like that, that I think that that could really help. And that would also, you know, add to just, you know, when you open that, it becomes more of an opening, because right now it really sticks out. Mm-hmm. So when you open it, that's the time that it sticks out. And then, hey, we're wide open. But I think, yeah, that historic line, breaking that historic line is a little bit jarring to me.
Well, I mean, if you go down, like I said, if you go down there, I think that door, they took the ramp out. So the existing ramp on the door on our left, mm-hmm. there's a small ramp that goes up there. The door on the right is a step up to, and then there's tile there. So that tile is new, it doesn't match the classic tile. Mm-hmm. And then there's a section cut out where they had to, I'm sure, structure that platform up there. So the tile there isn't
contiguous,
seamless as it is now.
No, but it will be, I mean, with painting over all those irregularities, you will create a nice mm-hmm. line. And if you can continue across the door, I think that'd be great.
Yeah, it's a great design idea.
You know, I wonder, it doesn't even have to match the same line. I was thinking you could make it almost drop down a little bit so you could have a full three-quarter door, and then you could have sort of a flower bed effect from the street with that bottom row, mm-hmm. and that would be a nice place to put outdoor seating. People could sort of look out over the
pony wall. Yeah, that would be cool to have a little patio right there.
I mean, visually, you could do it that way if you didn't, because I think it's going to be hard to do, you know, half a door. I mean, as much of a door as possible probably made sure needs the best to have that open air feel.
It's always tough to resist jumping in to help with design.
Isn't it? I'm going to do that. And they're the ones that are supposed to.
I think Robert said it nicely. That word gentle seems, you know, very appropriate description. It's you know, you found it, it's kind of like, you know, camping and leaving only your footprints. You know, it's the building looks like the building. It's all very appropriate, and I can see where it'll all be all about the functions that happen in the building versus all being all about the building, you know, and it'll let it stay as it is. I was curious if there is any... an intent to augment or change the lighting on the exterior of the building.
This sign will be backlit. Other than that, I don't think we'll have any lights outside.
Maybe a couple lights in the entryway, the two doors that you see.
Yeah, I think those already exist, though. Yeah.
And well, that's the other side of that question is there any existing light
that stop it
that illuminates the facade at all?
Just over the doors.
I'm sure the beauty school probably wasn't a hot night spot or anything. So your food service might be open, you know, into the evening hours, and mm-hmm. and you might consider. With a gentle hand, doing some kind of exterior lighting.
That's a good idea, I think.
Especially if there's going to be seating outside, and it is, I don't know what your intended hours of operation are, but if there is going to be evening or nighttime dining and seating outside, then having that additional lighting would be useful.
I agree with everybody. This seems like a real sensitive treatment to this. Did you mention what the Raylan style treatment is going to be in terms of color? Is it going to be just anodized?
Just anodized.
Was there any thought of matching the frame color? That's the only part about the whole thing. It seems a little jarring to me. Is the existing sort of, you know, frame color and existing windows?
No, I think I was intending to keep it as clear anodized.
That was really my only thought. I mean, the idea that this sort of module is, you know, is a modern door, I think, is
it will have doesn't really show up there, but there will be trim on those sides, yeah, for the frame.
Are we talking about the garage door?
Yeah. And that would be painted the same as the rest of the trim color.
Just out of curiosity, is that an aesthetics call on the anodizing, or is it just the cost of money?
Mostly aesthetics, yeah. It's got that kind of a more industrial type feel.
Great. So, lucky you, two people are gone, but all three architects showed up.
Thank you, Richard. You got some free architectural advice. All right, so John, I guess you'll be taking care of the rest of this project from here out. And if you need us again, by all means, come back. We're happy to help. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good luck.
Good luck.
Yeah, good luck with you.
What's the name of the restaurant?
Little Conejo.
Nice.
And the Spanish animal is playing soccer. Ordering beer, picking a fight. Yeah. That was soccer coach who say you only need three things to be fluent in any language: how to ask where the bathroom is, how to order beer, and how to pick a fight.
Had we not scheduled them, our apartment to come over here earlier, but start in June, at 6 o'clock.
Welcome.
Okay.
As background, this is on 8th Street. It's where the Mighty Bowl is now.
Where the what is?
Mighty Bowl, where they have the door that opens the Dutch doors. The Dutch door now, the
Dutch door, yeah.
Serves food out of the kind of window. And what they're looking at doing is taking the facade of this building, which I pointed out in the staff report, is pretty nondescript. It doesn't seem to be a lot of what the original building might have looked like left there. What they are looking at doing is maintaining most of what I would consider to be the significant features, including the area above the cornice, it's at the top. Mm-hmm. And the intent is to add some additional features where right now it's a blank wall. And so, again, we're just looking for comments. We're not just looking for comments. We're seeking comments on this from the commission. It's inside the historic district as well. It's kind of nice to see somebody's buildings being reused. Mm-hmm. It's kind of an interesting design, and actually, it looks really good to me. So what I'd like to do is let the applicant's representative give a presentation on what they're planning to do.
All right. Hi. Sorry I'm late, first of all. I got stuck in traffic on my way north. Sorry about that.
That never happens.
Never happens, ever. No. My name is Raheem Abbasi. So I'm the owner of Abbasi Design Works. We're an engineering and design firm based out of Portland, Oregon. And I live up here in Vancouver and am involved in a handful of projects up here. My first project up here was Compass Coffee, actually. So I ended up actually, the GC walked off the job and ended up having to take it over and finish the job out as well, which was a pain in the butt. Real briefly, so the first phase of Mighty Bowl, we already had gone through our permits for, and we were already open, which is the commercial kitchen portion of it, which he was mentioning is the Dutch window, so people can come up and take an order from the window itself. And the whole idea is that Mighty Bowl is food carts. They have two of them total right now, one that's parked permanently over at Clark Community College, and the other one that kind of rotates from spots downtown. And what they were really looking for was they used to rent space out of another kitchen, and that's how they were operating. They could have their commerce kitchen essentially there. They needed their own, though. So we went through and did a renovation of this building to get the kitchen going first while we kind of worked on and figured out what we were going to do for the actual restaurant space. Because what Mighty Bowl wanted to do was be able to have its
carts that can go out to different parts of the community and kind of create interest in their product and their food type, but then have an actual sit-down restaurant where you could come in and show up and hang out. So they found the building, we put the kitchen in it, and we started working on designs. And what you can see, what we tried to do was take the history of the building, which there's not a whole lot of available information that I could find besides the fact that it was called the Hong Kong Inn at one point, which really bothered me. So, like, what kind of inn is located in this building? But you never know, right? It was a restaurant, right? Well, like, why would you call it the Hong Kong Inn if it's a restaurant? It seems really strange to me. Then it was called the Palace for a short period, but in every rendition of it, it's essentially only had one window, at least in the last 30 to 40 years, one storefront window area and door, and then everything else been the CMU infill in the panels. And so what we looked at is we wanted to get more light back in there and wanted to kind of open up and recreate the post and beam concrete system of the building. And with that, like John was mentioning, one of the things we wanted to do is retain the cornice that's up there. It has this interesting kind of relief that is carved into it, but it's out of concrete. So it's quite interesting. I don't know exactly, you know, what effort they would have put into cast that in place, but it's quite nice. And so we were like, all right, let's keep that element, but let's create a separation between that and the rest of the building, which is really just concrete, and then some CMU block infill that we have here. So that's kind of where we came up with this idea of this yellow stripe line up there. Is we're taking colors from their branding and trying to almost mature them a little bit to the idea of going from, almost like a kid growing up, right? You're going from that cart to that brick and mortar location, right? So we're like, all right, we're going to take your color scheme now, we're going to mature a little. So we came up with this navy blue, kind of darker color concept, striped yellow bland line, which is meant to kind of represent the sun, which when you look at their typical branding, they have green rolling hills, blue sky, and sunlight. The idea being to express to people that all of their food comes from the earth. And so we wanted to express that on the exterior of the building as well, using what was available to us. We are opening up everything as much as we can with storefront glazing. One of the most random rules we came upon, which was interesting, is down the street is Main Event and all of their trash is sitting on the sidewalk. We're not allowed to do that. We have to put ours inside of an enclosure inside the building. So hence why this is not all storefront glazing on the right panel to the most east. We needed to create a trash enclosure that someone can actually get in, pull all the trash out, and all the recycling and compost, and get it off site, because we can't store any of this outside like apparently other businesses down the street from us can. So it kind of sucks, because we forced us not to lose a bunch of windows we wanted, but we came up with a kind of a unique idea, which was I capped the ceiling of this at 8 feet so that I could at least get transom windows above it, so I could still get natural daylight to come in. Since we face south, most of the day and most of the operation period, we're going to get light coming in over those windows into the interior of the space, thankfully. The one wall we are retaining that is currently CMU is the most westerly wall. And the reason for that is that that's actually where we're doing a lot of our kitchen prep. And so it would be pretty detrimental to their functionality on the inside to have to open that up as well. What we decided to do was try to articulate on it by putting plants on the wall. And so I came up with this concept of, let's take a bunch of clay pots, let's cut them in half, and we're going to attach them to the wall physically with new backings on them so that we can actually irrigate and plant, you know, different types of ferns and plants inside there that we get south facing sun. So that's been our concept. We have a new sign that we're proposing to go on the exterior. The idea is that it would be wood paneled and actually be etched wood. So we'll have it laser etched, carved their typical logo inside of it, and it'll be on both sides of it. We are planning to have lighting, so that would be the central bay, by the way, the sign. The other bays will all have exterior light on it. We're proposing a specific wall-mounted kind of black finish light, so we get a little bit of upward light, but mostly downward light along that concrete column and pier. And then we also are proposing to have lighting underneath each of our awnings. So the entire four bays, and I'll pull this one up at this time, we are proposing to put these new steel-clad awnings, so they'll be C-channel awnings, with underside of wood across all of the bays, so we can create an environment for people to feel like they're walking underneath and protected from the rain, but also allows us to get lighting in there, so we can make sure that this is pretty well lit during the evenings. My understanding is that their operations are aiming towards being open a little later in the evening, possibly until 9 or 10 o'clock at night.
Yeah, so that's the project.
There is some movement in the awnings, just to clarify, we we kind of took this angled approach to the way we set these awnings. So they're not these perfectly sitting out there straight awnings. They have a little bit of articulation to it. The idea was that we are taking that, and it was kind of giving homage to what was in there before. So there's this really strange wood siding they put in during the last rendition, and it's at these really odd angles. And at one point, we were thinking of keeping all of those wood siding inside the building, and so then the awning dimensions kind of came from that siding material. And then I showed up yesterday, and the siding's gone. So I kind of lost the purpose of that a little bit. But I still really like the articulation of the building myself with the awnings on it. So, but I was surprised to see that the interior wood siding was gone. So,
can you pass that around?
Oh yeah, of course.
John, maybe a quick question for you. I wasn't aware of this garbage can. Or
I wasn't.
Why it can?
Why they can answer that question? Hi.
Sure. Hi.
Rebecca Kennedy. I've been here before. Worked on some of these projects for the city. So the historically, Vancouver has had a really challenging solid waste management issue in downtown. We don't have alleys like most downtowns do. Mm-hmm. And obviously old buildings were not built to accommodate garbage recycling, composting, and sort of our normal solid waste, modern solid waste processing. So we are now in an effort where we are actively working with businesses, building owners, as buildings get redeveloped to essentially get them to work with us to come into compliance with the code. We have a lot of garbage recycling cans on the sidewalk right now. That's a violation of the code, but we also understand there aren't sort of spaces and facilities for this right now, so we're not going to come in and say, hey, you building down the street, for, business down the street from Mighty Bowl, you've been doing this for 6 years, tomorrow you have to stop. But we're working with them, so as new businesses or buildings are modernized and come in, we are we're asking that they meet the intent of the code. So it's a process. Sorry, you're at the forefront of it.
It's disappointing.
Yeah, but
I'm gonna blame you.
Yeah, you totally blame you. Yeah, so it's something that as a city we're really trying to improve the look and feel and the walkability of our downtown by addressing this issue, and I'm working with people over time to kind of meet the intent of the code. So. Mm-hmm. That's.
Can we pass the other sheet around as well?
Yeah, of course. There are two different sheets. So there's one with exteriors with also some details of like how we're doing our window treatments. I forgot to mention, by the way, I realized the center panel or this panel here is actually recessed in about 6 feet so that you have an actual entryway that people will walk into. So
and that is the entry.
Yeah, and what we're trying to do is get some covered bike parking underneath there so people will actually put the bikes on the side so you wouldn't see them because they'll be behind the piers. And then this one is actually a window that will slide open. It's a four-panel window that we are planning to use from Arcadia.
So it'll slide open so that whole wall will be open?
Yes, on the inside though. So it doesn't protrude outside. It doesn't encroach outside. It's a slider that opens up to the inside. We were looking at an accordion version one, and we've also now just bid out a slider instead that is a four-panel slider. So it ends up being a single panel that you still see and then three openings, right? And it looks like that's the direction we want to go. And that's the one that we have proposed on these drawings. It's from Arcadia. We originally tried to do an accordion, and the budget for the project just couldn't afford putting one of those in. So,
well, I think it's an interesting design. I'll begin with comment. I like it. I've walked by that location many times, and it just seems very sad to me. I really wish somebody would do something with this, and so it's great to see that that's happening. It's, you know, it's a little bit of a past-present fusion with the design, I think, but I don't think it's too out of place. John, were those old automotive bays that are being reopened?
I don't know.
Okay. It almost appears as though they were. There was some kind of an automotive...
That used to bring the machine shop for Rex Automotive. My father worked there.
Okay. That's surprising because normally those would have car decking, and that doesn't have car decking in it.
It was not a repair. It was a machine shop.
Interesting.
Yeah, interesting. But I mean, that would be kind of in tune with original use and restoration standards as far as the Secretary's standards go. So I like the design. I have no comments. Somebody else want to weigh in?
Well, I'm not an architect. I'm one of the few in the room that's not. And I love what you've done with the flower pots. I think that is just a stroke of genius. And it, to me, it adds that third dimension, both in terms of the height and the roundness, the rotundness, of the convexity, the western cavity area, the roundness of the pots. And I like the colors. And I like the fact that, you know, green is Mother Earth, the blue is the sky, and yellow is the sun, and I get all of that. What I'm a little concerned about is, in my mind, you've got you know, basically 12 grids here of glass. Mm-hmm. You've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 grids here. You've got a whole bunch over here, and there's no glass over here. And originally, it was a machine shop.
Right.
So I would like to see some continuity of glass either here or in the door, something to bring the glass to all four. What?
That you said that that's the problem.
Right. So you could put glass above it, but that would give it natural sunlight.
Yeah, I would need to talk with their programming a little bit with the owner and see if he's open to that. There was a very specific desire not to have any O penetrations there from him, which is why we didn't plan any at all. I would need to convince him that that's actually, you know, a requirement to get through. So,
well, I'm not saying it's a requirement. Sure. I'm just saying that it just catches my eye. You've got,
sure,
you know, your grids here, the grids here, the different grids here. They're all three different. And then over here, you've got sort of a transom above a doorway, and over here, you've got a half transom over a doorway. So maybe you could make this transom match that transom. And that would give it enough continuity for each four of the bays to tie it together more.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense to me.
And then, you know, this doesn't have to open. It just could be more natural light. You know, I think it's the opening that they're not wanting. Mm-hmm.
It is. There's partially the opening, but it's also because it's their prep stock kitchen, they wanted to keep light from in there for some reason. It's like they have all their beans and rice and everything that's stacked up through that wall right there. Mm-hmm. So I would just need to talk to you about what the height is that he actually needs to be at. I mean, it's hard for me to believe that you can stack something above 8 feet. So why couldn't you throw some transom, right?
I'm not sure you want to stack anything above 8 feet.
Right. Seems like my way.
And so I didn't quite understand here. So this transom is mimicking this. Right?
Correct, yeah. So that's an overhead garage door style with glazing for the trash room. That is actually our trash room, but we are actually planning that it won't be completely see-through. And the reason for that is we didn't want to see people looking inside and seeing all the trash.
Which we appreciate. It's the reason we're trying to get off the street.
Right.
So I'm wondering, could you just do a tinted glass there and then maybe this one with... I mean, it strikes me as a very dark door vis-a-vis all of the translucent glass.
I would need to talk with you guys, with the city, more about what we can do with those, with whether it be tinted or what the requirement is to kind of help keep that from being visible.
Because in my mind, the architectural integrity is more important than garbage storage concerns.
Well, what's interesting is what maybe in the, I guess, contrary to the idea of adding more openings would be, maybe that doesn't need to be.
So maybe in case it, like the other side.
Right, maybe more. That's your balance rather than adding more windows. Mm-hmm. Your balance is that, especially if it's a trash room, maybe it matches more of that other wall of not having windows.
There's no other place to put the trash in the back?
Sadly, no.
Sadly,
because from an occupancy standpoint, I need to have multiple exits for this. So I have to have an exit from the kitchen. I have to have an exit, two exits from the main space. If it's greater than 49 occupants, I've limited our seating to 49 to get away with the one entry. The other door is actually the access to the basement, because we needed to create a second exit from that basement in order to utilize the basement. Mm-hmm. So there's some building code elements that force us to have to separate these three entries from each other.
You know, you've taken a rather boring space and made it really interesting.
Thank you.
And I like it. I'm concerned. I'm certain the glass is just.
I see your point. It makes sense to me. I mean, there was
when we originally were working on this, the idea was that we had these three large panes of glass, and then the last one, which was the commercial kitchen, we actually had made that all opening windows at one point when we had a different program for the space. And
right.
I definitely was more attracted to that idea of just puncturing this thing back open, right? But some constraints started to come in, you know, between kitchen requirements to trash requirements to exit requirements that started to influence that. I like your idea about trying to find a way to get some windows above the top of the prep kitchen side, and I'm definitely going to propose that to the owners when I meet with them tomorrow about it. Like, I think that's a really good commentary.
It'll tie them together visually,
I think so. Yeah. I'm uncertain about the changing of window types for tinted window doors and things like that. One I'm not 100% sure about. I would need to think on that one a little further myself.
Well, the three architects that we talk after me will give you lots of ideas.
Perfect, I love that.
The other thing I was going to ask, you said there was a C channel awning, so that C-channeling, it fits into the space.
So it's actually what I'm going to use. So it's an 8-inch deep channel, but you won't see the flanges of it. It's turned on the outside, so you only see the flat face of the awning when you're looking on the outside. The channel faces inwards, actually.
Okay, and then some of them are not completely rectangular. They're
correct.
Okay, I read.
Yeah, they're at a slight angle, and so actually the angle starts at the from one point. It starts out, and that angle is continuous through the others. But we cut the 4-foot length that is the pier is cut out of that movement. So it's still continuous. So that angle actually is continuous. And your experience as you're walking down the street is you would look to you visually as though there was no break in that channel all the way to the end.
Mm-hmm. So it'll sort of be contiguous to the eye.
That's the idea.
I'm a bit of a purist, so I don't like modern elements in older buildings, but I very much like that. I think really makes it interesting. So. And you never know, their use of that prep kitchen may change because restaurants are just booming right now in Vancouver. We don't have enough of them.
That's true.
And so they may need to move their prep kitchen, and then, you know, they might have wanted some of your advice about making that fourth bay look similar to the other bays.
Agreed.
Because it'll be a lot more expensive to do it later.
Also true.
I'll split my comments one into historic and then into design. I really like, I don't know if you had arrived yet when I said last time that these openings and a lot of these commercial, they're almost kind of disposable with how you infilled it. And, you know, so the way that you've opened it back up and engaged the street, you know, I think that's great. I also really like that you've reintroduced the Clara story in there, which, you know, a lot of the buildings around here, you know, they had those storefront openings and then they had the Clara story. I think that really ties your design back to the historic uses. Mm-hmm. I notice it's a little bit higher than most of the other ones. I don't know if that's a big deal or not, but as I think about it, since it's an entirely new Clara story, there's, you know, having that continuity, if there's a continuity with the neighbors, if they're all at about the same height, which I can't remember off the top of my head.
They don't have me. Yeah.
Okay, well then never mind. Yeah. That doesn't matter at all.
I gotta say, Main Event is like the most disappointing building to look at in the world. So,
it's sad that they could take peppers and make it worse. But
no, there's not really a good continuity there for a Clara story that I've seen in the buildings that I've seen in that section.
Okay.
Right,
well,
versus
then,
if you walk like around the street, on the other hand, though, you'll see less Clara stories in other buildings that are on Main Street, right?
So then I think, you know, this idea of, you know, it's a modern use of those storefront windows. I doubt this was a machine shop originally. It was probably, you know, commercial storefront originally. So I like that you've recreated that. I really like that you've introduced the Clara story. I like that it has all these historic architectural elements used the way that they were used historically, even if the entire design is contemporary. So I think that that's great. And I like that you're, you know, retaining what little bit of original architectural features this building has and accentuating them. You know, it's painted right now, so you're painting a big different color. Who cares? From design, the only thing that I would note is that when you read the facade from a distance, the garbage reads as the entrance.
I know it does.
Because it's this one contrasting color.
I struggled with that a lot.
And so
we went back and forth, and I tried to change using, I actually looked at using a charred cedar for it instead to try to make it more diminished. And after we started looking at it in three dimensions with the owners, what we determined was that the problem with going with a darker color or something that would make you not want to look at that is that it pulled your interest from the building overall away. Somehow, even with that being at the trash, the fact that it wraps on the inside of that mm-hmm. trash room to where it comes to the entry will still attract your eye, I think, to that front and pull you towards it. But I agree with you. It reads as though that wants to be the entry. Mm-hmm. It's the weirdest thing. I agree.
So you kind of have these two service bays flanking and then the public bays in the middle. So it almost seems like, you know, reflecting what you did on the left side as much as possible. I understand that the composition is different, but that might be, you know, that has nothing to do with history. That's just right. my two cents.
No, I agree. I understand. I struggled with that when we were choosing what kind of wood to use.
And then this is south facing. Yes. You have a light shelf on the inside.
Yes.
Okay. And that may be
the ceiling of that trash enclosure bay is dropped down to where it's basically you're 8 foot, so you're at 8 foot 8. Mm-hmm. The transom's right above that, so you get all of that light coming in will bounce off that that shelf into the space.
Is there a light shelf on the middle bays as well?
No, the middle bays are just completely open to the interior.
Okay, because that south facing might be one of the reasons that they don't want windows in the prep area is, yeah, a lot of food is degraded by UV. And since it is south facing, if it's possible to have a light shelf on the inside, that the heat gains through that south wall are going to be
true.
Pretty nasty. But that would help bring the daylight deeper into the building.
That's
so,
good commentary.
Again, nothing to do with the history, just my two cents.
Sure.
Overall, I think it's a great design, and I think it's a great way to bring this building back into revitalization.
I have one more thing.
I don't have anything to add.
Okay. I'm wondering, you know, historically downtown there was a lot of clear block, and it's gone away. And I'm wondering if you could just put clear block in some of the transom areas, maybe on each side, first and fourth bay. That wouldn't let the UV in here.
That's true.
And clear block would be a wonderful way to give it that historical vintage George Jetson kind of look. So, I mean, I don't know. I just think that there's got to be a way to add glass that looks like it was born that way and make it 1, 2, 3, and 4 look tied together. And maybe clear block is an idea. Doesn't open.
That's true. That's
doesn't let UV through. I mean, anyway, mm-hmm. it's an idea. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't have a lot to add. As far as the historic aspect, I mean, the building was kind of a manila envelope with infill in the bays, and you just had the bones there. And I think, you know, as has been pointed out, that was the right treatment to open those bays up. I like the design overall a lot. I like the geometry, the proportion really works, and I'd like to see a little bit more of the detail, because I think what I'm seeing when I look at those drawings is the detail supports the design really well too. I think that existing CMU infill on the, I guess it would be the west side?
Yeah, that's right.
It looks like it's that 8x8 patterned CMU.
Yeah, they did the soffits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you got a nice grid there, mm-hmm. and you did a nice grid in the sectional door, and the proportion of the storefront sections kind of works with that grid. The parapet treatment, was that existing? We're trying to look at the pictures with the CMU.
It's not actually CMU like that. It's this weird, we couldn't replicate it. We tried so hard, and it's so hard because it looks like it's some sort of like relief that was carved into it. You guys should walk by and take a look. It's really strange. I was really... Oh, there you go. Yeah, this is what it actually looks like. It's one of the strange things, and I would challenge anybody to actually create that in a model.
So you're applying... is that where the...
We'll keep that as it is. We're just planning to paint that. That's all we're doing.
Oh, there's not a...
We're not actually doing that. The geometric thing was just we needed to somehow show that massing.
Okay.
I couldn't get that detail into a model.
That's probably just...
Yeah.
Why not? It looks easy.
It looks so easy to draw.
Yeah.
And then my clients have so much budget here.
Oh, it's like funky circles. Or
yes.
Something.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, that's kind of cool.
It's a very cool feature, actually. It's like the coolest relief. That's why I want to not lose that,
okay,
because I love it, actually.
I saw the relief, but I wasn't sure what
it was. It's very strange. I actually don't know when it was added, because it cannot be original to that building.
Yeah.
It doesn't fit any of the time frame.
Cornice.
It just doesn't fit with any of that, though. And when you stand up on the roof, you can see that it starts about 1 foot above the lowest end of the roofing. So they already had some other type of cornice and parapet on there originally. I think they replaced it with that.
So, Randy, the yellow stripe is paint?
Yes.
And you're painting the parapet treatment above to match the...
This one below. The idea with the yellow stripe was to kind of break up the monotony of that bluish color across the entirety of it.
And then the...
And then that ties in with why we're painting the pots yellow as well.
Okay. And the wood is...
would be a cedar.
Cedar, just a...
Unstained. Unstained cedar. So we're going to start out light, clear gray, right?
Yeah.
So the idea is it'll be kind of that orange yellowish
color.
It'll start to fade over time, obviously by nature, to a little bit of a white gray color, right?
Got it. I struggled with the entrance. I wasn't sure, looked at the drawings where you went in. As far as the
this is a recorded meeting, so
as far as the left side, I think, you know, I was seeing was that the design was balanced. You had that left that CMU there. I don't think it needed windows, but that's an option. Let's see, anything else? Storefront, it looks like just black anodized, or?
That's kind of what we're thinking, yeah.
Okay. And, you know, maybe some kind of augmented lighting at the entry or something. It'd be nice to have something that pops the entry.
So, we are planning that under the awnings they will have recessed cans themselves for soft lighting, but we are planning that each of those columns individually has a very distinct architectural light on it. Right, and the whole point of that is to get that cone along it as you're walking, so that you kind of have that experience of importance of levels as you walk along the site.
Yeah. Now, this last is not criticism; it's just an observation. I recently spent a little bit of time at IKEA, and when I first saw your rendering, it was like I was having nightmare flashbacks.
Oh, that's horrible.
What are you talking about, color-wise?
Those are kind of IKEA colors.
Color-wise, it's Pennzoil.
IKEA.
But I totally understand it's all about the branding.
Yeah.
And if that's what the branding is, that's what the branding is. And you know, it's pretty powerful. It's a powerful combination of colors.
I didn't even think about IKEA. Damn it. Why did you put that in my head? I'm not going to get it out of my head now. Sorry.
I don't think it's IKEA. I just... Okay.
So I have a quick question. The cornice, is it continuous or does it have seams in it?
It has no seams.
So it's probably just cast concrete.
It's cast concrete.
So it's probably just...
I think it's actually pre-cast concrete. I don't think it was cast in place up there. I think it was pre-cast and lifted up in there.
So that was cool. A secondary modification to the original building, right?
I believe it was.
So do you have any indication what it was before?
I couldn't find anything. I couldn't find a historic photo of what was there.
Did anybody get up there and actually look?
For what?
What's behind?
There's nothing behind it. It is the. If there was something there, it was pulled off because this is full thick, 8 inches thick.
I think we're straying a little too far into.
Oh, sorry.
Consultancy. Rob, do you have any comments that you'd like to make?
Yeah, just real quick. I think it's a real appropriate treatment of the building. I like the way the sort of primary geometry of it. You basically have not touched it all, and just some paint. And I agree with Sean that the kind of storefront infills are kind of their own thing that change over time anyway, and the way you've got these, they're almost like pieces of furniture in those days, mm-hmm. They're doing their own thing, and even the canopy doesn't leak over into the primary structure, so I like all that. And slightly, maybe less related to the historic aspect, the mull pattern on that storefront module just keeps hitting me. You know, it seems an odd... Mm-hmm. Not a decision. Everything else seems so integral and kind of harkens back and relates, and that seems a little odd. And the other thing is, part of this is historical, part's not, and that's the sort of canopy movement that has the effect to me of sort of shearing off the building from the fabric on either side. You know, where usually those canopies are kind of relating to the ones on either side, and the decision to do that gives some nice form, it gives a center to the building, but it also kind of sticks the elbows to the fabric on the sides, in my opinion. But other than that, I think it's excellent.
Thank you. Thank you, Rodney.
Thank you.
Thanks for the presentation.
Thank you.
Don't forget your.
Did you want this?
Oh, yeah.
This is costing money.
You have to just decide if that's what you want to do, if you want to hire someone to do that.
Mm-hmm. And do we have, so maybe we'll jump forward to that one. And I apologize, I'm going a little out of order here, but I'm feeling well and might excuse myself. So do we have any idea of what the cost would be for the work plan budget?
I think I had $1,000 budgeted.
Okay.
We would need to just check with Holly and make sure that
that's still sufficient to do it. Okay. So the question then for the commission is whether or not we want to pursue the Clark County Heritage Register for that property.
Right.
And I noticed that in Jackie's notes that we contacted the property owner and he's agreeable to doing
that. Okay, he put this together and ran out of resources and funds, so he's asking for support to put together a nomination for the Clark County Historic Register.
Okay.
So is he asking for us to pay him to do that?
No, the consultant. Okay. And this is not eligible for the National Register because it has been moved at least once, and so that's something that you also need to consider. Do you want this nominated on the County Register, even though it's been moved once?
And the other...
I don't think that prohibits it from being on the concept.
The other register nominations that we've paid to have done in the past have been national register nominations, not local. So this would be a slight change.
So would something like this be something that could come through the grant applications?
It's supposed to be sort of historical promotions.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if that would qualify for the... What do you think, Sharon? You're closer to that than I am.
But we earmarked the funds on
that,
right?
We did earmark the funds, but that doesn't mean... I mean, we haven't made any commitments to spend it on something else. We could buy a bunch of bronze plaques for, some of the other buildings that are already on the National Register.
Have they tried to... I mean, there's obviously been a lot of community activity around this. Have they tried to raise the funds or find a volunteer to do this? Or did they come to us
not
first?
Not that I'm aware of.
The applicant is elderly?
I have no idea. I mean, I don't know who the building owner is.
Mr. Woolridge?
Building owned by the Colts.
Yeah.
The Colts. They moved... Building. red. Yeah. And then they're behind, they're the driving force behind saving the building.
Yeah, Margaret definitely wanted the building saved, and so they moved it and rehabbed it ultimately, actually.
Do they have a connection with what would be the overseeing historical society for the center site? I'm not even sure.
Yeah, there's a museum there, but I'm not sure.
It's the Clark County Historic.
It is Clark County's Historic, okay.
Any thoughts? I mean, I've seen the pictures, I read the description that was provided to us, the history of it. I think it's a beautiful building. It's been well preserved, even if it has been moved. And I think given its history, it's certainly something that would be worthy of our consideration of helping to list and preserve on the Clark County Heritage Register. So I personally would be in support, but maybe we can kind of go around everybody, get your 60 seconds worth on this one if you have an opinion.
Since this isn't a vote, I don't know if I need to recuse myself or not. I've been involved with the project.
Well, if we're going to commit the funds, we do need to vote on it, correct?
Okay.
Yeah. I wouldn't mind hearing your opinion, though.
Is that?
So, just your thoughts.
Yeah, okay. I think it's a good example, and it's of the type, and it was carefully rehabbed, and parts of it were restored when they could be restored and reconstructed. So I think it's definitely worth preserving.
And I don't even need 60 seconds. I think it's worth allocating those funds. But this is the type of thing we should be.
I'm in agreement, and I've already, when we were talking about what should be on the agenda as well today, I already mentioned that to Jackie as well, but I also like the idea of us extending our range of activities beyond this Vancouver core, so you know, to be able to support a project in the center seems like a very... brings us along that path of widening our net, and bringing more people aware of what we do.
If you know funding nominations is the sort of thing that we do, then I think this is a good one to fund. I worry a little bit about the sites not trying to do it themselves before coming to us. So I wonder if there's an opportunity to have it be a matching grant or something like that. But as far as funding it, you know, this, and extending the range especially, I think it is a good idea.
Yeah, so we've worked with a couple of individuals in the past who do this on a very discounted basis compared to what you would typically pay an architectural firm or something like that to do a full nomination for you. And I think that we had earmarked $1,000. Is that correct? Yeah. So it's a bargain.
So then I guess it's matched by in-kind donation. You know, it's a moot point. I don't want to overstate it. I just, if this is the sort of thing we do, this looks like a great building to do it for.
I like the idea that we help people who come to us, and in the process. Beautiful older buildings have a longer life.
Who does own this building? Is it the cost?
It's the cost.
So I support it.
So that's the only kicker, is the cost could afford to do this.
Okay.
Yeah, they could.
All right, so everybody's spoken well of this
project.
We did
support the work of... why am I forgetting the name of the Luke Key building as well? So I think, making that judgment of who can afford, again, it's kind of moot. I think it should just remain in the fact that if they come to us and we can promote what we do here, which is promote, save, and then let's do it.
Yeah, and the fact that it's been moved is really moot. I mean, Slocum House was moved. I mean, a lot of the buildings have been moved, and they're on the county registry. So I don't have an issue with that.
All right, so if everybody meant what they just said, I can predict the outcome of this vote. I'll entertain a motion to go ahead and fund the nomination of the Le Center Hospital for the Clark County Heritage Register.
Go ahead.
Oh, I thought we were already going ahead. No,
I need a motion to.
I make a motion that we grant $1,000 to the Historical Center and Hospital.
For the purposes of the registry.
That you hire someone, you're going to contract with someone to do the register nomination.
That they can hire someone to do the registration nomination.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right. It's unanimous. So can proceed with that one. Let's see.
The only thing you really have to vote on tonight is the CLG grant.
CLG grant. Let's talk about the CLG grant.
Do you want to figure the other two items on the CLG grant slide?
Well, those are more review,
just
kind of commentary, right?
Okay.
So.
There was one funding issue on the theater spelling. If they wanted to allocate funds to redo the signs, could you decide on that?
Okay, let's talk about the CLG grant first.
Is that this?
Sorry, it's the first bullet, the list of national.
No, he skipped ahead to do this.
Sorry,
we're confusing.
Okay, you are confusing. Okay.
So, but I know Robert's not feeling well and would like to go home. So of the business that we'd like you to accomplish tonight, in order for Jackie to apply for a CLG grant, you guys have to approve that it's okay to go ahead with the grant for the historic structures at the Morgan. There's no grant. So she didn't provide you the grant application. You're essentially voting on, is that an okay thing to submit a grant to the state for?
Okay. Should I make a motion that Jackie move forward and apply for the grant?
I second the motion.
Okay.
You got this, Dan.
All in favor of moving forward with the CLG grant for the historic structures?
Aye.
All right.
Okay.
Approved. We'll go ahead and file that grant application.
Two motions in 2 minutes.
It's going to be a new record.
Okay. It does.
So, let's see. So there's a couple of things on, so I think sort of a list of potential plaques. I don't need to be here for, I think, five commissioners to debate potential plaques is enough. And then you have the farm cemetery interpretive panel. Five commissioners should be enough for that. Let's talk briefly about the appointment process and the schedule selection committee. So, Jan, Sharon, maybe you can jump in here, but as I understand it, both City Council and the Board of County Councilors want to be more involved this year, and so they plan on reviewing and conducting their own interviews and going through their own selection process. So that changes things. I know that Jackie reached out to some of the other CLGs in the state and consulted them about how they've done this in the past. And generally the process that they go through is the officers and the staff form a subcommittee, and then they just write a memo and make recommendations to the City Council and the Board of County Councilors, and then they'll go through their own process. So what they're doing is largely independent, and it's a bit of a departure from how we've done this in the past. So that being said, I'm going to go ahead and announce a selection committee, and so that would be Sarah and myself, and then Jan and Jackie would participate in that, and Sharon may be involved in that as well. And then Jan, the process would be did I get it right?
Yeah, you did.
Complete the memo. Do you have anything to add to?
So the selection committee from the Historic Preservation Commission will review the application. They'll write a memo to the county and city council with their recommendations for who should be appointed, and then it's up to the county and city councils whether they want to interview candidates or whether they just want to move on those recommendations. Our city council's gotten a lot more engaged recently in interviewing potential advisory committee members, so I assume they're going to want to do that. I don't know about the board of county councilors, but our people are revamping the process and they've gotten a lot more engaged.
Yeah, I think Jackie did mention that they're planning on doing their own interviews as well.
So for those of you who are up for potential reappointment and are reapplying, don't be surprised if you get a call to come in for a brief interview with the city council members.
So are we not voting then? Is it just the selection committee?
Well, if you're up for renewal this time, you wouldn't be voting
in any way.
So then what would happen is this, and the city council, the board of county councilors, would basically make their own selection independent of what we select anyway. So it's not really up to the council. What we do is we would just write a memo and kind of say, these are the candidates, these are, you know, we reviewed them, these people have these strengths, we would recommend these individuals for interviews.
But as a body of the ones who are not running again, we're not voting?
No.
Right. Yeah. No.
That's not new, that's always the case, correct?
Right. So the people that's always been the case.
So the applications are due Friday, and Jackie asked if you two, three, could pick a date for next week when you want to sit down and do the shortlist and kind of map out the staff report. You don't have to decide tonight, but if you can decide it Friday,
okay.
Give us a date, if you want to during office hours or the evenings.
Okay.
To move pretty quickly,
mm-hmm.
so that you can go to the city and then the county.
Yeah, and when did they want to do their interviews?
City council probably will do them sometime in May.
It
depends on how quickly y'all can, I mean, we can get together and make the, mm-hmm. put the memo together, but okay. I think the timeline Jackie had given me is that the city council would have the month of May.
Mm-hmm.
And okay. so, and that always depends on how quickly we can schedule people to come in for interviews.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all changed quite a bit since
just this, sorry.
Well, it's gotten consistent with the rest of the board's options.
Was the historic committee going to do interviews or just look at CVs and recommend?
That's up to you if you want to do interviews.
In the past, we've always done interviews, but it sounds like if
you
there's
could,
already going
to
be a round of
it.
Interviews yeah, that are happening, yeah, it seems kind of
yeah.
overkill.
I wasn't interviewed.
Yeah, we didn't interview last time.
Yeah,
it was kind of odd.
Did I miss that meeting or something?
Well, we were up for reappointment last
time. Well, but Sean wasn't, so he just got appointed, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, this is kind of a real flip from what we experienced last time.
Right, but my direction from my city council is to get all of our advisory committees and boards in sort of the same process. Mm-hmm. So... And this is the one anomaly that doesn't work the way the rest of them do. So.
Oh, I wasn't aware of that. I thought that everything was changing for all of the commissions, but we've always kind
you've
of
always been an outlier.
Yeah. Okay.
But as a board, we will vote on the people that we do or do not interview. If we're not, no.
The selection
no.
committee.
No, the selection committee does.
It's really unusual for an advisory committee to select their own members. At least my experience with the
yeah.
city council, they want to be in that position because they feel like these are people who are making recommendations or providing advice to them. And we've tried to get them to switch that to give the committees sort of more authority, and they're not interested, so.
Same with the county.
Because when Rock and Alex and I all came on, we were all interviewed by the existing...
Right.
Right, and the... City Council and the Board of County Councilors did not participate, did not express an interest in participating.
Right, but it's a different group of people.
This is also tied to the next bullet, which is updating the rules and procedures, and this is one thing Jackie wanted to do, is kind of codify how this should be done, because there's no real codified mm-hmm. process, and then whatever you come up with that, update that to the rules and procedures, that there's a consistent path moving forward.
Did you say this... Part of this would also bring us more in line with the other CLGs in the state?
Right.
closer or like as the way they do it?
I think there's a little variation, but much closer. So it sounds like subcommittee, two chairs, Jackie and I, maybe not. And we're going to review the applications we get, and there'll be a memo that'll go to the two councils with kind of the traits you're looking for and a recommendation of who you think they should interview.
Right. So basically more hurdles to jump through and jump over in the process.
You got in just in time.
Yeah. But then the update to the HPC rules and procedures, that doesn't need to be done in conjunction with that. I mean, that's something that we can reconvene to do, right?
I think that's on there just to ask if you agree that staff get us forward with some recommendations for your review. Changes to the rules and procedures, including this.
Oh, so you're going
to
bring
update the rules and
certain recommendations to us in the future.
Yes,
we'll,
yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Do we have approval to look forward with making some changes, including this, like updating?
Recommending some changes.
Some changes.
Right.
I think that. I move that you move forward.
You don't need to. This is okay.
So that's okay? We can move forward with the track changed version of.
Sure, yeah.
That's a good idea.
Just for background, too, Rob and I were talking to Jackie about this to clarify a few questions, too, that we had, which sound like exactly the same questions we're talking about again tonight, which would be, why are we doing this? Why do we need to do this now? So, and it sounds like it's been out of date for a while. It's not going to necessarily, if we do have a really full agenda sometime, I don't think that's going to be the night that we're talking about bylaw updates, just so everyone knows. But
it's just a good idea to look at them periodically.
Right.
And
if you have things that are sticking out that you want to flag to our attention, just send us an email, let us know. Incorporate that in.
I mean, my aviation advisory committee hasn't been updated since the early 50s. It's definitely time for them.
Early 50s.
It's historic. It's mini brand.
Okay, so what does that leave us with?
Two items in the
So there's. Sarah, do you mind if I turn it over to you?
Sure.
There's
got
a
it.
List of different
got
properties. Sorry, folks. I'm excuse myself.
Do we want to just table everything until the next meeting?
I think we can just finish. We can finish. We got this. Sharon, can you explain to everyone what's the matter with the theater flags?
So the was printed with, it was spelled theater with ER, and the property owner was upset because historically it's been RE. Mm-hmm. So the issue is, do you want to allocate funds to redo that sign or just say that's your sign?
And again, this is one that Rob and I were going back and forth with Jackie about. Basically, I guess to justify what I had to say about it was that it's... she had done some research to look back at their nomination to see how they characterized theater in the nomination. They did spell it with an ER, not an RE. So that, in my mind, means staff, did their due diligence when they put together, the paperwork to have the sign made. They didn't just, the spelling of theater. It was in the nomination that way. I think that we have a lot of other buildings that we probably would like to have plaques on, and redoing this plaque to me doesn't seem like a real good use of our funds, since I think that the purpose of the plaque is to tell the story, and the story's there. I don't think it detracts having theater spelled a different way in my mind. So that was my... That's my opinion on whether or not we replace the plaque.
So the way that the plaque reads is the way the nomination was submitted?
Yes.
And so now that we've ordered and paid for and had great energy in the process expended, they're mad because the R and the E are transposed.
Yeah, I don't think mad would be a characterization that I feel from this person, but he really wants the historical spelling of theater. and wanted us to consider it.
I mean, neither of the two that we ordered are three. They didn't get to see the layout before we set it in because Jackie took them off the register nominations.
So maybe I'm less moving forward that we might want to show the building owners that first, but still, yeah. Still, I'm not convinced that we need to spend money on another plaque.
How much was the plaque?
$120.
Had Keegan's been spelled
incorrectly.
Yes. I would feel differently about it.
Or if we had made the mistake.
I'd feel differently if it was an elimination.
I don't think that people are going to think that it's not a theater.
He's maybe the only person that notices this.
I agree with Sarah. If Kiggins had been misspelled, then yeah, we would have to own that. But if the nomination was submitted that way, then he's going to have to live with a beautiful plaque that he didn't have to pay for with the R and the E transposed. Yeah. That's
There are worse things.
There are worse things. Like,
yeah, I got a note from Lukey today. The interpretive plaque that we put out front identifies Rudy Lukey as having graduated from Fort Vancouver High School, and apparently he got graduated from Vancouver High School, not Fort Vancouver. They're two different high schools, which I had no idea, and apparently the Historic Museum didn't either when they put the text together, so they're not asking to have it replaced, and I can't imagine there's a ton of people that are going to catch that.
So maybe going forward we need to have a protocol where, you know, we'll approve of it and then we'll email a copy to the...
We emailed a copy. Bruno has no idea. I mean, we're in contact with the Lukey family. Just nobody caught it. I mean, it says Fort Vancouver instead of Vancouver.
So, would you like us to take a vote on the redoing of the plaque? Or
just
having us weigh in?
Plaque.
Okay.
We would have to vote to redo the plaque,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
To spend money. We're planning not to spend money on it. All right. And did you have a list of other potential plaques?
Yes.
I didn't see that.
The last meeting, you guys had requested the list of properties on the National Register.
Mm-hmm. I don't know that this needs to be done tonight. So maybe if you guys could just take it home, take a look at it, and maybe at a future meeting, you know, maybe we'll try to do a couple of these a year. Hopefully with better spelling results.
And so my request, I guess, on this, when we do make some decisions, it'd be nice to see some plaques in the other cities.
Yeah.
So just kind of see if we can spread the...
Yeah, I think that as, you know, especially if this is an ongoing thing, mm-hmm. if we could, you know, prioritize the ones that are open to the public and then prioritize the underrepresented areas of the county and just... work our way through them over the years.
And that, you know, I would add to that prioritization, prioritize toward locations that will get traffic so that we get bang for the buck out of this plaque.
It's a good idea.
Well, and how many of these locations are now on our new mobile app? I mean, is there any intersectionality in that direction?
They should all be there.
Yeah.
So that's cool.
But some of them are not open to the public and are in locations where no one's going to be walking by and looking at the plaque, so I like that idea.
Yeah, that's the point.
Okay. Spread them around, but we're going to get bang for the buck.
Yeah.
We're probably, because we did manage to allocate a lot of our budget this year, so for this year we could probably only afford to do maybe three.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm. All right, so maybe we'll bring this back next month or soon. Okay, so the next part is review of the Farm Cemetery Interpretive Panel. You're up again, Sharon.
Okay, it's easy to look at it for, you know, the top two typos. So the other ones, just we take a quick read through it and mark it up, and then I'll just consolidate them.
I didn't notice anything like that when I read through it, but this upper corner just seems like a weird statement. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Because it doesn't, it has information, you know, part of the information is down below and part of it isn't, but that opening statement is just, poor farm residents are buried here.
It's redundant because it's the first sentence on the main body too. So, it's redundant. The one thing I think that we need to kind of change here is we use the word dead, and It's a pretty blunt noun. I think that maybe on second reference we could use the word deceased. And I do think we can massage that upper right-hand paragraph to make it a little more concise and not so redundant.
But you could just take the first sentence off there.
Yeah.
And then just...
How about that? Remove the first sentence?
Yeah, maybe that would do it.
You'd have to edit the rest.
Maybe start out with people with no known family, comma, transients, you know, those stricken with illness. There's a complete lack of...
Every word at the top corner?
Active verbs in this thing.
Right corner.
Top right corner.
Or even move the content into the main body and add another person. Because those people are really interesting.
Have more stories.
And is there always two texts there? Like, if we take the text out, is that not matter?
I don't think it has to. No.
Okay. What do you want to do? Delete the whole...
Maybe get rid of that and just put more stories. Put a couple more people there.
Yeah, another person or two if we have them. Because those are really interesting.
The interesting part, yeah.
Yeah, and what's up in the corner is really just content that could be moved into the main body.
Yeah, so maybe we could go...
Add another story?
People with no known family, comma, transients, those stricken with illness or suicide, we should call it what it is, died in accidents or buried here, and you could incorporate that with many of the dead were not associated with Porse Farm. You know, you could put it somewhere either there or in the second... You know, it could be absorbed into the first or second paragraph in the main body. And then you could put another, I mean, the child one was really interesting. The Oregonian just ran a story last year about scarlet fever as a problem in Portland, so we could tie that in with modern times and make it sort of relevant and say, you know, a simple, you know, infection that is still a problem in local communities today. I've got the date on that if you want it. But just a way to make it more relevant. To people. People think scarlet fever and they think it happened so long ago and they're safe from it, but there's kids in the Portland School District that have it. CDC issued a report about it. And the other thing is the last sentence on the cold car, about 27.
Where? The cold car. Right in the corner, that guy. John.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Yeah.
Bottom right?
Yeah.
So just the way that last sentence is worded, Kolokar pulled out a revolver and began shooting at one of the deputies who shot back and killed him. You know, we've got shot and shot and... I think we could just shoot even shot. I think we could change that up and just say, you know, the young man pulled out a revolver and began shooting at a deputy who fired back, killing him.
Can you say that again? Pull out a revolver.
Just making note that it...
Who fired back,
okay, just at the last
comma, killing right. him. There's okay. a distinct lack of active verbs in this.
Okay.
Is what I kind of noticed. And then there's just some redundancy of dead.
Rocky, you were going to say something.
Yes, I was going to say something. The first sentence of the first paragraph reads, several Porter Farm residents were buried here between 1873 and 1943. And the first sentence of the third paragraph says, burials ceased after 1937. That might be
a problem.
Conflict. Yeah. But I agree with the idea that, you know, writing could use some...
Well, and it's also not accurate when you say, aside from the dates, several poor farm. I mean, we've got, you know, there was a lot, there's four listed here. That's more than several. So I think we either put in a number or we don't. But we don't make it factually inaccurate.
There probably is a range of estimated
at least,
there.
You know, like at least 50 people.
When they did a survey of the graves, right?
Because look at the picture. The picture has, what is that, 13 or something or mm-hmm. more? So, I mean, it's more than several, is my point.
Yeah.
And it just, I mean, if this was a news article, it would be kind of boring. And
did you have something to add?
This has been of profound interest, and I've become quite knowledgeable.
What about
because
you
I
give your name? I know you live near there. You've been here before, but okay.
I come to usually.
But just for the record, to give your name.
And I have signed in 1815 Northeast 72nd Circle. I want to comment a little bit because I have spent an extensive amount of time meeting with Rosemary Harshman, who was part of the GPR, the Ground Penetrating Radar, did the genetic or the genealogy study with Church Latter-day Saints. Identified most of the people. There are 40-some people. I just wanted to give you some insight. 40-some people that we don't even know who they are back there. They were hit by trains. And I thought it was rather profound that so many people could get hit by trains in the Richfield area. And of course, you know, I thought, well, they must certainly have been trying to get out of town, getting on the other side of the Rockies. But, you know, I just recently read that 12 people in the state were hit by trains last year. So apparently it's not that uncommon in Washington. But I do want to make clear that it's not overwhelming, the amount of poor farm people in there. It really was the cemetery. And Clark County really did not have a big claim to fame like, you know, Spokane, Seattle, and some of the areas that were kind of going on. We had Fort Vancouver. And so there was this this homesteader population that ended up here. There was a man who was overcome by the weather, and he was found dead in a cabin. He made it inside, and had somebody not noticed the backpack on the front porch, they would have never seen his body. There's a lot to be said about it. I don't want to see.
Is he buried there as well?
He is.
Well, that's a story that needs to go over in the green column. So who's this woman, Rosemary?
Oh, well, Rosemary Hirschman did the genealogy, and I actually have her number, but I'm sure Jackie Camp knows her as well. And if you haven't seen the book, she's compiled a book. It's on the reference list at the library, but she does make them available, and she answers her door if you knock. But I just want to say I'm very tickled about that, but I do think there's just a lot more to be said because, you know, it cost $34 to be buried there. The county, for the most part, covered the cost. David Fuller at Hamilton Milan Funeral Home, which was one of the five funeral homes that was responsible for burying people there, explained to me that, you know, he said, Lisa, he wanted to know what my concern was. I was just mostly trying to educate myself. And when I shared with him that I was a Catholic and I was just concerned about protecting the people there, he said, there are no Catholics there. And but Jackie said she wasn't so sure about that. He said that those people were taken in by St. Joseph Cemetery. And he assured me that they are still bumping into the cedar caskets there at St. Joseph's, the ones that were buried in that same time frame. But that said, I just want to say I'm very excited about the project, and I just can't encourage you enough, you know, to look into some of those stories, because I think some of them are just so profound. And in fact, just one last note, then I'll go away, because it's fun to me. This is a fun part of history, and I think it's an important part, and we don't spend enough time. In fact, the State Preservation Society, Archaeology and Preservation Society, they were very excited that you folks are working on this when I shared with them, because they said that we just don't give enough credence to some of our old cemeteries. And it's part of our history. It could be gone forever, but a lot of interesting things going on there. The last fact I just wanted to say is that a number of people did not want to pay the $34 that it cost to bury. And so those bodies, I am told, were buried in blankets, you know, or and they stealthed into the middle of the night and kind of went in there and hoofed in. And I wanted to make sure that this group especially was aware of that, because while we have the general area, again, I live right up there, and I was slightly bothered that my house comes within, I guess the GPR showed 12 feet away from the nearest grave, but they only have the nails to show. There are no other remains there. So we can see on the ground penetrating radar the directions of the nails, and, you know, so you can kind of see where there are coffins. Mm-hmm. But even, you know, there are known bodies that were just wrapped in cloth and put in there, and we don't have records. So I was a little bit disturbed, but it was before the GPR was done. I can't be mad at anybody in the county. I love where I live. I love the history. But I want to make sure that you are aware that, you know, there could be haphazard.
There could be more bodies outside this.
There could be more bodies.
Yeah.
And then the archaeology department at the state level tells me that although 150 by 300 square foot area was platted out, that they did not use the platting that we have today. You know, we know the exact corner of our property lines. And so they just kind of said, there exists a plot. Now, we did do ground penetrating radar, but the state tells me that, you know, basically, I had shared that there was some plowing that went on last year at a certain part, and they said, you know, if you see that again, would you call us? And I know they discussed this at the farm preservation, at the farm, it's the farm advisory meeting, you know, and such. But the one gentleman said, well, you know, we farm forever and whatever is done, but again, my major interest is I want to protect that and I want to see it preserved properly. And I just appreciate that, you know, you would listen to the fact that there could be bodies in other locations. In other words, the state archaeology said somebody may have chosen a particular tree because they were part of and just, you know, buried a body and such. So anyway, for what it's worth, I think the sign is great. I could see it as a farm advisory, but I really hope that I get to be a part of your group because I'm very excited about the work you do. The closest I've ever come was being a part of. Are you familiar with Main Street USA?
Oh yeah.
Okay. So anyway, enough said. I'll take a bath.
So Lisa, one quick question. So you know Rob Freeman? He used to be the chairman of this board. Freeman.
You know, I don't know that I do.
He's an archaeologist, and he's involved with the...
You know what? He stopped and introduced himself at the farm advisory and said he was involved and concurred with some of my research that I've done. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Do you know if he's done any of the archaeology out there? Because he's involved with the Portman farm heavily.
Quite possibly. I don't know. Uh-huh. He did attend the meeting, and he stopped and introduced himself, and... when I shared names of some of the bones archaeologists and such at the state level, you know, he said that he was aware. It wasn't a long conversation, but he did identify himself.
Well, I'm just wondering if we could use, you know, some of these people as a resource to make this better.
I don't know who wrote this. So
it does need to be made better. You know, while we've been talking. There are more inconsistencies.
Right. Yeah, I think since it's the first time we've all seen it, that what would be, not to interrupt.
Do you mind another one?
Not to interrupt.
Yes,
but
where?
Two more.
Where?
Well, 1913 on the line below here is given as the date.
Yeah,
and that's the date. And it's the 1873 here. They've got a very, certain sounding number of 200 men, women, and children buried, but...
several.
It sounds like, who knows, you know.
And then it
was also called
several.
Marble Mount Cemetery at one point.
Sorry.
So I think back to the drawing board.
Yeah, what I was trying to say is that if there's, since we're all looking at it, that wouldn't it be great just to go home, everyone really look at it, send comments, and then
bring it back. I don't know who wrote this, but it needs some more work.
Well, and the other thing that I was going to say, I did read this pretty thoroughly before I got here, and it talks about there's two plaques affixed to the boulder. One reads, although their lives ended in poverty, these pioneers raised families and toiled in the woods and fields to build this county. But then it leaves you hanging as to what is the second plaque. So it's just, and there's, it needs to be, right, but we need to clarify that. And it needs to have more active verbs, you know. So if a professional writer would do a little better here. I think the story of the man dying in the cave or whatever, I love that, and that should be like at the very top.
All right,
great idea, Lisa.
Thank you, and I apologize for interrupting.
We did all.
No, this is part of coming to a meeting.
That's what we
come to a meeting, you get to talk. That's part of the public part of this meeting. All right, so do we have any other work that we, since we skipped around a lot tonight, did we miss anything? Okay, one update on new business would be that I did participate in the tour of Camas today, since I could walk out of my office and join them. Nick was there from the state, and so was Megan, I want to say. Might be wrong with that, but Main Street program was there as well. We took a look at a few of the buildings. I only got to hang out with them for about an hour. I'm sure they spent another hour or so walking around. I pointed them in the direction of a building. I might have brought it up at another meeting, I'm not sure, but if you guys have ever seen, there's a building on Fifth Avenue where the owner has come to me and asked about being listed, and And I asked him to talk to Jackie about it. I don't know. He kind of is one of those people that likes to have great ideas and then might not ever follow through on them. But it is a Hillborn building, as it turns out. It's a pretty unique building. It used to be a doctor's office, then it was the bank, and now it's a bike shop. And so Nick looked at it. He was pretty excited about it. So it could be like a national register sort of building, too. So I'm hoping... and on Friday, I guess to tie this all together, Friday, Downtown Camas is having their first Friday event where their theme is historic Camas. They're going to have information on all of the historic buildings. Any building that has historic significance, they're going to have like a poster or something to give more information. They're going to have a woman available at, I want to say at Journey Church. I think she's going to be there. She's just a wealth of information. She'll be speaking. There's going to be some book signing, I think, as well. But the great part, too, is the mill. I think I've mentioned this to you guys. They had opened kind of a little historic museum out front, and it'll be open, too. So it'll give you guys a great chance to kind of see the history of Camas. And I did encourage, since the Downtown Camas Association president was part of the tour, her name's Carrie, you know, to definitely apply for the grants next fall for some of their ideas with plaques and that sort of thing, too, so that we're spreading that kind of wealth east.
What time is the first Friday event?
It starts usually at 5. Okay. So these businesses will be open. They usually have a table out that has some kind of more information about what to see.
So it'll all be on, like, what is it, 4th, the main?
Pretty much on 4th, but I'll encourage you to go to 5th Avenue and take a look at that.
It's a bike shop?
It's a bike shop.
Is it?
Bike and Sport or whatever.
Yeah.
It's just down from the coffee shop that's on 6th, right? The green on the corner?
Right. Yeah, it is. Okay. Right.
Yeah, I know where it is then.
Yeah.
Okay. I've still got a house out there that we've got to get on the register. It was the mayor's house, and it's on 6th Street, 615, I think. And
that's where they had that open for the Christmas event, didn't they?
No.
Oh, because
I've been on them, but there's.
I'm doing my best to encourage people to come to this commission or talk to Jackie.
They're not on anything, and it's a cool house. I know the house really well. But anyway,
so that's my update.
We got to keep those plaques as incentives, you know?
That's right.
Do we have any other business? Can I have a motion to adjourn?
Almost 8. I second it.
Okay. I said somebody has to make the motion.
Oh. I make a motion that we adjourn the meeting.
And I'll second.
Oh, thank you, Ryan.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thanks.
Thanks for telling us about.
What's that?
Robert hasn't spread all his germs around.
Well, now that explains why he was way over there. Yeah. Like, what are you doing?
Thank you.
Well, I'm sorry I was late, everybody, but I had a public hearing before this.
Public hearing before your public meeting?
Yes. You could have watched. There's proof that they recorded in our
channel. Can you help me with the security when we go out?
Oh, sure.
You're Republican tonight.
No, I do. I know.
Yeah. Here we got 3 boxes.
3 boxes?
3 boxes.
Yeah.
You got 1,000 more.
I thought you were going to talk to me about that.
Yeah, you do. You do it from this era. And listen to your skills.
Yeah.
I don't know who wrote that. She wrote the last. Yeah. There were only little tweaks there.
Good night, everybody.
Good night. Yeah, I have no idea, because the county was totally responsible for that one, so I had nothing to do with it. I don't know who wrote it.
It seems like they've been getting worse. No. So, this was kind of a big rock.